December 7th, 2014 is the Watt from Pedro Show.
I'm never gonna get it right. I'm Jay Fox.
Your life to get a car. 3 days, 4 hours. Guess you'll get a car. It takes 1 week of your life to buy a mansion. 3 days, 4 hours. Get a job. Get a car. Get a bed. Takes 2 hours of your life to buy whiskey. 45 minutes. Get a job. Get a car. Get a bed. Take 6 minutes of your life to buy a loaf. Go ashore for it. Get a job. Get a car. Get big. Get drunk. And eat. Okay. The weekly. £15,000 leaving the Sony Swan Prize. Announced. Was won by number 5, 7, 5, 4, 7, 8. The winner is in hole.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Sunday. Hey, yeah. Brother Matt, how are you?
Good, good.
You went up to Venice yesterday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we had a real cool time. That was pretty cool being a wingman.
5-0.
Yeah.
Wingman, Brother Matt. we started the show off. Well, before that, we got a guest, Brother Matt, all the way from Chi-Town.
Welcome.
The INET, Mr. John Langford.
Skyping
welcome
it.
Aboard.
Hey, good day to you. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Oh, great. We played some music from, we'll get into your journey, but some of your first stuff maybe, we'll know that when we hear your story. John Coltrane's Configuration, and then after that, Never Been in a Riot, Mekon's 32 Weeks, Heart and Soul, Where Were You, I Have to Dance Then on My Own. These are two of my favorite records when I was a more younger man, and just blew me away. So thanks for being part of that. We got lots of your other music since then, but I just wanted to get that right out of the way. So you
play the early stuff. That's why I was a drummer.
That's right. Let's see. Where are you from? Where were you born? In Wales?
Newport in South Wales. Okay. Little seaport. Well, not a little. I say little seaport town, but I just like saying the word little because it's not. It's massive. But
it's across the river from
Bristol.
Right. I never got to play there.
Just down the road from Cardiff, and it's in Monmouthshire, which is the bit of Wales which was always fought over. So there's some of it's Welsh speaking, some of it's really English. It's like, you know,
a very
Creole place.
Did you grow up speaking Welsh?
No, we didn't speak Welsh. In Newport, you're more likely to hear people speak like Polish or Urdu or something like that, or Somalian, than you would have picked speaking Welsh.
Because it's on the border, or those are immigrant
that's
cats, right?
Seaport town, you know.
Yeah, right. Like Pedro.
Sailors. Think Shirley Bassey.
Shirley Bassey, great singer.
Every day.
When I got to play Albert Hall with the Stooges, Stooges and Shirley were the only ones that had real bands. Everybody else was lip-syncing.
Really?
Much respect to her, yeah.
She
wouldn't do it without a real band.
She still sings great, I think, you know. So.
Yeah, she's like Elvin Jones, you know. You just keep making music till, you get checked out. there's some people like Arthur Rimbaud, right? They only did it a couple of years, but other cats they have to do it the whole life, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's been something that's interested me actually, because I should have probably given up when I was 30, and now I'm 57 and I'm still doing it, and I feel like what I'm doing as interesting now as what it was then, so it's a strange thing.
Okay, back to Newport there. Do you remember your first music experience? Like first song?
I mean Tom Jones was a big influence in Wales, you know.
He's a Welsh dude, right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, my grandmother and my mother and my sister, they all listened to Tom Jones, and Tom Jones was this, you know, he's the only pop star, really. And Shirley Bassey as well, but when I was about 13, I heard T-Rex, Jeepster by T-Rex on the radio.
That's what you remember?
That's what I remember sort of being my music, you know?
The first gig that I went to, you know, a concert, I was 14, and it was T-Rex.
No, really? I never saw T-Rex play live. I wish I had.
At the Long Beach Auditorium here. Oh, man, what a trip.
You saw him in the States?
I saw him in Long Beach right across the bridge here, right, maybe 7-8 miles from Pedro here.
They
tore down the pad. It's now the Long Beach Opera House. In fact, in those days, the back room they used to film those Don Kirshners. You ever see them, Don Kirshner Presents?
All right. In Britain, you know, everybody was into, like, football hooliganism and, you know, stuff like that. And when David Bowie and Roxy Music came out, that was an interesting time because music had been very hippie and progressive before that, and then suddenly it was like all the football hooligans were going to the gigs, and it was a different atmosphere altogether, you know. So Slade, T-Rex.
I saw Slade 10 years after.
Oh, it's Slade with 10 years after. Wow.
There's an echo.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, no. Oh, the opening band was Gary Wright. It was all synthesizers. It was terrible. Anyway, okay, so you're 13, you hear T-Rex on the radio.
up to that point, you've never bought records, you never really played music, no drums?
No, nothing at all. Never even thought, didn't think it was possible, you know.
Okay.
It seemed like you, at those days, it seemed like you had to go to music school for...
Sure, yeah.
You know, something like that. Yeah, everything was about playing lots of notes and, you know, smoking a lot of pot and having really long hair.
Okay.
You know. But there was a few bands I liked.
Wasn't Budgie from Wales?
Who's that?
Budgie.
Budgie, yeah. No, he's still out playing.
Kind of boogie rock, right?
Bert Shelley.
Yeah.
My cousin's got a band in Wales, and he said Bert Shelley offered to play bass for him for 50 quid.
Wow.
A few weeks ago. He's still just playing the clubs, working men's clubs and
the pub
in Wales, yeah.
I think even Badfinger was Welsh, right?
Badfinger.
John Cale,
yeah, that was I knew about John Cale before I knew about the Velvet Underground, which was, you know,
bad
punk rock chronology. You know.
It's all right, man. It is what it is. Here, let's hear some more of your music, okay?
Alrighty-do. Almost time for my ride to Prac. 5 more minutes. Time enough for another tawny port. Of course there is. Goes so well with the MDMA. Those guys are always late anyway.
My pal's name is Footfoot. He always likes to roam. My pal's name is Footfoot. I never find him home. I go to his house, knock at his door. People come out and say, Footfoot, don't live here no more. My pal Footfoot. Heart hater. And now the piece de resistance. Oh, what now? Still the what? Oh, shit. I got so involved in my ice sculpture of Champion Log Splitter Newt Hampson, I lost track of the time. I'll be right there. Yeah, I know we got a pickup late. Chill. He's always late anyway.
Feeling a bit damp? A hot shower, perhaps. That'd be just right. Those guys will be late anyway, like usual.
The juniper and the love child, they met one day at camp. They said hello to the unicorn.
Monteverdi for the ride?
Please.
Would you mind?
Of course. I won't take the CD. Jeez, how'd you jam all those Cheetos brand delicious crunchiness cheese snacks into the CD tray?
Never mind. Radio?
Oh, fine. Jeez, that sounds like something Maroon was singing in the house.
I just hope he's ready. Throw me your torta. Throw me your torta. Both tortas.
Bye.
Watt from Pedro Show. At the top of that, we heard John Lanford and his Sadies doing American Pageant. And after that, something brand new from Kyoka, Toy Planet. And Vince Maroney, Brother Vince.
Yeah, cool.
Ride to Prac, Atomic Sherpa's new album. We like to abbreviate a lot here, so Prac is short for practice, you know? You know what really bugs me? I'll tell you, not to get too much into semantics, but this fucking rehearse word when you're going to practice with your guys. It's such a self-important...
We never do that.
Okay, great. Then you're, I'm on board with you there. And then finally, the Waco Brothers.
Rehearsal involved in what I do.
Yeah, I think actors rehearse, you know, dudes who play music practice. Okay, see Willie Fly By, Waco Brothers after that. Which you, there, I got quite a few Waco Brothers in the mail from good people at Bloodshot. And that's a great band, too. But maybe that's a little more in the past now?
No, Waco Brothers is still going as well.
So it's concurrent?
Yeah.
Okay.
My whole thing is that, you know, once you join the band and start doing it, it just goes on forever, so.
Oh, yeah. I like that. So we're at this point where you, yeah, who gets to make music? You have to go to music schools. Because I thought, tell me if I'm wrong, but I thought Mekons was from Leeds.
Yeah, we formed the Mekons. I went to art college up in Leeds in 1976.
Oh, okay.
And then the Sex Pistols and the Clash came around, and everybody threw their paintbrushes away and just formed bands. And
oh, so you left Newport. Okay. I graduated in 76, too, Pedro High. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But the Mekons, you know, was kind of extreme because nobody in the band was a musician or had ever really played any music before.
Yeah.
But just saw all our friends forming bands, so we thought, well, we should have a band as well. But we'll have a band where, you know, nobody could play. And I think it's the one point in history where that was kind of like not such a ludicrous idea, you know.
No, actually, it was beautiful. And it's one part of the movement I think is still healthy because you still got cats just making bands. And hopefully
we just sort of like, you know, we ended up, we had gigs, and we didn't know what we were doing, and we just had to work out something that people would be able to do something to, so.
Now, if you didn't grow up with these guys, these are cats you meet at school, right?
Yeah, well, I met the guys from the Gang of Four and the Mekons sort of, as soon as I got to Leeds, like the first day, I just ran into these guys, so it was a strange thing, you know.
But they're England, they're not Welsh, right?
They were English boys.
Is there a big difference with that?
Took a while. Well, one of the things about them is they were also kind of like from private schools as well, you know. So they were terribly working class boys, I would say. Although the bass player, Dave Allen, the bass player in the Gang of Four, was a good northern lad, you know.
Okay.
But it was an interesting mixture of people. Because I thought I was pretty slick when I was living down in Newport and I went off to university, but I suddenly realized when I got there what a provincial hick I was, you know. And
oh!
I met all these terribly sophisticated people with, you know, who'd read lots of books and knew all the theory, and it was interesting on, you know, some level.
Hey, there was a two-bass band part of this.
Delta 5.
That's right, Delta 5.
It was the bass player. I was the original guitar player in Delta 5.
Wow.
And Rock was the Mekons bass player. She left the Mekons to form it. So.
Okay, so is this the same school that Who Records from?
Yeah, that's where we used to eat our egg and chips every day.
Is where they play?
Yeah, the refectory at Leeds University.
Okay. I don't know anything about it. I just liked the record when it came out.
that's a really good record.
It was pretty wild. But
yeah, they used to have fantastic bands. We saw the Runaways there. I saw John Cale there. The Boys played there. You know, as soon as I got to college, that punk thing was kind of brewing up. And then the Pistols played the Polly, which was just down the street. You know, and it was.
You guys had two singers, right?
The Mekons' original band, yeah, it was two guys, Andy Corrigan and Chalky White.
And that was a little different.
Yeah, because they used to swap it around, you know.
A lot of punk bands.
Everybody used to sing, so it was a weird thing.
Okay, that first record, man. What is it?
I sing one on the first record, and I was the drummer, so it was, you know, it was all.
Which one is yours?
I'm singing Heart and Soul.
Heart and Soul. That's the opus. That's like the almost 3-minute one, right?
He's just going.
Sounds like somebody's plugging a chicken.
Whose idea was the art? The art, you know, the microphone and then the speaker. I mean, that's so fucking happening.
That was Bob Last, who had the label, did the artwork for the first record. We didn't. Fast Pro. We didn't even know you could make artwork for your record, so we just let the record company do it.
Oh, wow.
But then we saw it, we were like, oh, that's cool, but we should do the next one ourselves. So I did the next one.
But then one went on to a big label, and they put the wrong band on the I think it was those other guys.
It was the Gang of Four. We put that picture on the back.
Oh, you did that on purpose?
Yeah, we did it on purpose, but I think the record company thought it was a picture of us because they weren't terribly involved in our career, you know.
It's the one with the monkey. You got the typewriter and the monkey, right? Now, this is based on the theory of, you know, you give enough time, a room full of chimps can type out all of Shakespeare, right?
Yeah, or you could put enough Mekons in a room, they might come up with a sort of rock song. But it would take an infinite number of Mekons to do that.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, as far as like rock and singles, That the one that I'll have to go home by myself and
I have to dance it on my own. Yeah,
that's a slamming record, you know, for just starting out.
Well, we thought, you know, we've done the first one was done in like a cottage in Scotland with like one microphone, and it was just, you know, it really sounded like us in a rehearsal room or something. And we were kind of, you know, we just thought, well, we can make a better record than that. We wanted to make a record that sounded like a T-Rex record or, you know, Velvet Sure. Underground record or something like that. We weren't trying to be, you know, really pop, but we just wanted to make something that did the job, so.
Now, that's a beautiful single. The album kind of tripped me out, and then you came out with a double 7-inch. And then I never heard from you guys again for a long while.
We did another album, but Virgin didn't want to deal with it, so they kicked us off the label.
Oh.
We were kind of bored. We were playing a lot of live gigs, and there was a lot of fighting and trouble at the gigs, and it was really not a very cool scene in England at that time.
Yeah.
And so Virgin dropped us because we tried to make an album which was much more kind of like, kind of folk music based, you know. We swapped instruments. We started having a bass player could play the violin a bit, and we started using a lot more like loops and, you know, like almost like dub reggae type things and
wow.
Distort pianos. And we were just, you know, it was around the same time as Public Image were making Metal Box. I think
we
got really bored with punk rock. Punk rock in England got really stupid really quick, and it was like a lot of kind of heavy metal guys who just kind of, you know, got their trousers taken in and played a bit faster. And
actually, I detected some of that even early on, like Slaughter and the Dogs and stuff. You could tell, like, there was some of that over here, too. You could tell dudes were going for the ride.
Yeah, and it was like, and it became like a genre, you know, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was when punk started, it was almost, you could do anything you wanted and everything, you could do anything. The more extreme you were and the weirder you were, the better.
Then
it became like just a very narrow little cul-de-sac of like, and then the Mohicans and the, you know, you had to have a leather jacket and
yeah,
all that.
People ask me about that, and I say that's what really hurt, was people thinking it was a style of music instead of state of mind.
It was a state of mind, absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard to tell people who weren't there, you know.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here to say that. So what happened? You guys pulled the plug on Mekons, right?
No, the business pulled the plug on us.
I have a record here from a couple of years ago called Ancient and Modern, so I know the band kept going. But as far as like that version, because didn't it have another incarnation even after this? The ladies started coming in the band, right?
Yeah, that's right. But around about 1983, Susie joined, and then Sally did some stuff with us. And it's much more civilized when you have women in the band. One of the things punk rock did. Well, we always had. Actually, Roz was the bass player, then Mary was the bass player.
Yeah.
But it was always, you know, it was always much better. I don't know. So, I mean, it was more. It started to turn into a little weird community, because after the Virgin dropped us and the second album came out, and nobody was, you know, we didn't feel like anyone was really very interested, and the press kind of hated us. So it was a very fruitful time for us to sort of, you know, work out what we wanted to do. And we could have split up and we could have just wandered off to the corners of the world, but we were all still friends. So it was it became like, that's when it started as a sort of Mekons, more of a loose kind of project rather than just a straight rock and roll band.
Man, right. And by this time you guys had left Leeds, you're in London or something?
I was still up in Leeds, but some of the guys were in London. Some people were scattered, yeah.
Did Mekons ever come and at that time play the U.S.?
We played once at Hurrah's in New York.
New York City, yeah.
Yeah, it was New Year's Eve, 1980, 81. We went on stage in 1980 and we came off in 81. It was just before the Reagan presidency, you know.
Yeah, I remember. But
it was a great gig because I met Lester Bangs at that gig. He came up to us after the gig, and we went to a party the next night with Robert Quine from the Voidoids. And
yeah, I got to record with him once.
Oh, he was a really nice bloke. And then Lester Bangs, great. You know, Lester was really hilarious.
People warned me about Bob Quine. Oh, he's going to be belligerent. But he turned out to be the nicest cat. I got to do Visions of Johanna with him, a freeze out.
Wow.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, no, he was very, very friendly, and Lester was just hilarious. I mean,
I never got to meet him, but I know he was a good buddy of Richard Meltzer's.
He came up and said, "So, why'd you guys play this dog turd music?" And we were like, "That's a very good description. Can tell you're a rock critic." And he goes, "You meant it is dog turd music." He went, "You're meant to defend yourselves." And we're going like, "Why?" He's going, "That's the most revolutionary band, a band that doesn't even like itself." And we're going like, "No, we don't. It's dog shit music." So he wrote some sleeve notes. "I'll write sleeve notes for your next album." We didn't have an album. So one of the reasons we put out the Mekons story was because Lester Bangs had written these sleeve notes, in which he interestingly mentioned Budgie, which is a strange thing, as you mentioned Budgie to me earlier.
Oh, yeah. Power trio, they called it Boogie. I remember when I was teenager, somebody had a bootleg of King Crimson. King Crimson, okay? And it's in between songs, and I guess a guy's sitting on a stool or something, and some cat in the crowd yells out, "Boogie." And he had a microphone, he didn't sing, but he would rap between tunes. So he gets on the mic and he is fucking pissed off. He's like, "We do not boogie." And meanwhile, here's John Wetton, like with a body shirt and, you know, blow dry haircut. But he played some wild bass, but man, the image of him.
Oh, yeah.
I always think of that when I think of. I thought Budgie was a pretty good boogie power trio, man.
Oh,
I thought
Budgie
had some good licks, yeah.
They were good. No, but anyways, I think Lester Bangs said the Mekons were better than the Beatles and better than REO, Speedwagon, and Budgie.
REO, Speedwagon. One time, Dee Boone and I had a talk with their singer, and his hair was so big, it was a trip, because he was actually the same size as him, but the hair was really big.
There's like 3 foot more of hair on top.
Yeah, and he's talking to Dee Boone real serious. We get done playing with some pad in the valley, and he says, "You know, I kind of feel like you do." Like, "You know, here's both of us working for the man." And he was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
That was a surreal moment there. Okay. You came back to the U.S. because, like, right now I'm talking to you from Chicago.
Yeah. Well, the Mekons came over. We put out an album about 85 called Fear and Whiskey, where we'd been like just puttering about in the wilderness. You know, I had another band called the Three Johns, which was quite a sort of happening band in England. It's a three piece, like really noisy. And then, but the Mekons were all the time, the Mekons were still doing things, because like I said, we were mates and we would all be trying to think of weird things to do. And we got enough material together for an album. We put out an album called Fear and Whiskey, and for some reason it really kind of took off in the States. So somebody said, "You guys should go to play in New York. We've sold like 1,000 albums in New York. You should go and play there." So we did, and that kind of ended up with me, you know, moving there.
Okay. Wow.
Like you do. You go where it's comfortable, where the grass is green. You go there.
Okay. Okay. And then, well, what about these John Langford thing, like this old Waco brother? And
well, the Waco brothers, you know, when I moved to the States in 92, it was kind of the end of, again, the Mekons had been on a major label and we got kind of dropped, and it was just a bit of a rough time, and I had nothing going on really, so I met some guys in Chicago who were kind of interested. That a guy from this band called Wreck, Dean Chlebowski, asked me if I wanted to do like a country band with him, and I had no idea, you know, what that would involve. And so playing some Johnny Cash covers, I was like, I could do that, yeah. So we just played in little bars, and it was really good fun, and slowly it turned into a real band, you know. And then Bloodshot Records formed around the same time. They knew I was in town and they asked me if I would do a track for their first compilation album, and it kind of just, the whole thing kind of spiraled out of that. And then suddenly, you know, by about 95 we had a full blown kind of hard country band playing around the clubs and bars. And what was interesting for me was that with the Mekons was very much, you know, like came out of an art school environment, and there was lots of, you know, things you possibly had to understand about where we'd started and about the history to even get into the band. The Waco Brothers was just this completely direct assault, you know, and it was just, you could put this band anywhere on a Friday night and they would just kick, you know. So
So how long were they going on? How long was that band happening?
That band's still going.
Oh, cool, cool.
Is it 22 years?
I don't know. With the Waco Brothers, yeah. No, it's got to be 20 years of the Waco Brothers.
Oh, okay, 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's the sort of band that doesn't really celebrate anniversaries. We celebrate divorces. Yeah.
You know, I didn't ask you about music. How did you get on the drums?
I don't know, because I didn't have any musical talent whatsoever, so I thought drumming would be the easiest way in, you know.
Okay.
I was just desperate to be in a band when I was like 15, 16. I was desperate to stop playing organized sports and go somewhere where you could meet girls, so
drumming seemed right. Yeah, so you thought the drums was the easiest. God, that's what I always hear about.
I thought it was easy, and it's not. It's really hard.
No, it's not. It's incredibly hard.
I know, but it seemed to me like it was easy. But then I wanted to be singing, and I wanted to be playing the guitar. Okay. And I didn't know how to do either of those things either. So I kind of, you know, the whole thing's been a process of learning in public, you know.
But you like putting guys around you that can play.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me about the whole wonderful thing about music is has always been the collaboration, you know, the fact that, you know, you get a few good people who are pretty good or good listeners and technically quite good, but you kind of, then everyone rises to that level, you know?
Right, right. Instead of the other way around, where you want to look like the big cheese, so you put a bunch of little, you know, mice around you.
Yeah. I've got no mice. I haven't found any mice.
Mr. Tito did that in the old Yugoslavia. You put a little mice around you, and then you always look like the big cat. But you know who was the guy who knew how to pick bands was Miles Davis, right?
Right.
Look at that. He knew he wasn't going to have Dizzy's chops, but he made sure he had good cats in his band.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me. The support, you know, I've had for, like, as a songwriter, to be able to present songs that I write to the musicians that I work with is humbling, you know, all the time, because it's, you know, the fact that people can take a raw idea and then turn it into something really beautiful. It's very cool.
Yeah, generous. But you know, that's what a band is. I mean, there is a weird duality. Yes, somebody, it's hard to dream by committee. But then when you put it into action, it's also hard to, like, manhandle it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if you do like, I mean, I think with the Mekons, we've tried to work out which are the best when the mass sort of works better. You know, maybe we'll allocate people. People will be kind of, you know, they'll have roles where they're in charge, but they're not in charge of everything. So it's not like everybody's bickering about every decision. We just let certain people decide some things, certain people decide other things. But basically, it's always a kind of collective will, you know. And it's often a kind of, you know, if one person's really pissed off about something, you know, we wouldn't want to go that route, you know.
Sure, sure. The Mekon, it's kind of a creature, right, from literature. Or?
It's from science fiction. It was
science fiction.
A giant headed green alien evil.
Oh, it's from a movie, a B movie.
It was a comic strip in England called Dan Dare.
That's what it was, a comic.
Space pilot of the future.
Dan Dare.
And the first Mekons gig, the Mekons, I was in the band, but I didn't bother to go to the first gig.
Really?
Andy Gill from the Gang of Four played drums, and they came on stage on a sofa with the word spaceship written on the side of it. And they were called Dan Dare and the Mekons. But then, because Corrigan was singing most of the songs, everybody thought he was Dan Dare.
Oh.
But he didn't want to be Dan Dare. So they became the Mekons, which was kind of a funny joke, because it's like there's only one Mekon in the comic strip.
Oh, and it's like some evil brain or some...
It's like a Margaret Thatcher sprayed green flying around on a tea towel.
Oh, that's right. They had a little spaceship. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little dinner plate or something. But it's all green.
This is, we're talking like early 50s or something, right? Middle 50s. Well,
it was that, you know, after Britain, you know, won the war, etc., and everyone, you know, what's the next frontier? We'll just have Spitfire pilots in space with stiff upper lips and the British Empire carrying it to the stars, you know. And so the Mekon was a kind of like Hitler substitute.
Yeah, right. The enemy we've met. Do you remember Pogo, that comic strip?
Pogo?
Pogo? It's an old U.S. Actually, it was a political thing that was in, like, Square John papers. But anyway, there's this one. Sometimes it'd be only one panel, and it was Pogo goes, "We've met the enemy, and it is us." So that's what I always thought Mekons was, like, we are the enemy.
Wow.
Well, you know, we had a couple. I have both both a continent and an ocean between me and you in Leeds, so... There was kind of a filter there. Sorry, John.
You played over there, though.
What's that?
You played over there, though, a lot, I'm sure. A
bunch of times, but not at that time. My first time was 82 at the 100 Club with Black Flag and Minutemen.
Right, right.
So for first 5-6 years of punk, I only knew you guys by records. And, like, hardly anybody came and played. Only, like, first ones. Like,
that's
jam.
A long time to get over.
Long time. And some I never ever saw, like Pop Group or Alternative Television or Mekons, you know?
Right.
I know you guys came later, but I was touring so much I missed you when you had the ladies in the band. Look, we're at the end of the first hour of Waffle Peter Show, December 7, 2014 edition. Brother Matt, our guest John Langford. Hold tight for hour two. December 7, 2014, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
My cup's half full, but my brain is empty. I'm overflowing in the land of plenty. That change must come. Can you break a 20? All messed up with somewhere to go. Looking good for radio. There's no good time to talk to me. But there's a little window when I think lucidly. Between 2:55 and 3. posse in tow, looking good for radio. How bad news on the phone, and as you'd expect, bad news long distance and worst collect. Got a taste for a bad, bad time, and we're gonna leave a bad taste behind. Glorious trail of uncommitted crimes, all beat up with somewhere to go. Looking
Say hello to everybody. Won't you say hello for me? You see, I can't go back and forth no more, at least physically.
I need to do that, baby. And it's cruel fate.
Show. Start the second hour off with Looking Good for Radio, John Langford and his Sadies. Then we are heard On the Dime by Dear Blanca, Hello to Everybody by Waco Brothers, Bye Bye by the Warblers, and Waco Express by the Waco Brothers. Waco, where'd you get this name? Have you been, there's a town on the I-35 in Texas, right?
Yeah, it was that weekend.
Oh, Mr. Corish.
We started, yeah, the Dean, the same. We'd have a different name for the band every week. And the reason for that was because we were pretty shit when we started. So that would, if we had the same name every week, no one would come. So.
Oh, you mean, yeah, not together. Okay.
So we kept changing the name, and it was John Boy and Dino, and it was Ranch Quake, and it was like Church of Country and Western Music. It was all these different names.
Ranch Quake.
Then one week it just ended up being the Waco Brothers because of the David Koresh disaster. And,
did you know what? You know what's also that town is famous for?
What?
Dr. Pepper.
Who?
Yeah.
It's a drink.
Oh, Dr. Pepper.
What's it say? 10-2-4? Because it used to be a little diet. There's a little clock on it.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
Yeah, well, that's why we had you on the show, so we can learn the shit like this.
It's important. I'm processing this information now.
Yeah, that's where Dr. Pepper... Pepsi's from Raleigh. Coca-Cola's from Atlanta. A lot of those soft drinks come out of the South. But I remember I was going through there on tour, and I remember there was some cat on the roadside selling little dolls of Mr. Korish.
Ooh.
I know.
Action
figures. Like
Sous
Vies. Yeah, like action figures. It was just a bizarre time. So while I was going through that town, you were naming your band. What a trip.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't do that. And it sort of stuck because the night we played as the Waco Brothers, we were actually quite good.
Okay.
So we kept the name then. And it, I don't know, it's been a little bit awkward because I still don't even really understand what happened that day. And, you know, I imagine it was like the government's overstepping the mark against a bunch of people who were raving lunatics. And it just seems a very sad, sad thing. So
it ended up really terrible.
Yeah, disaster. You know, horrible. And I don't know.
And it was used for stuff later on, right? The Oklahoma building?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which I got kind of connected to. I had FBI come to my house because I stayed in the town where that guy rented the truck. Why were you there, Mr. Watt? I was on tour, sir. And I showed him all my receipts. It was a strange thing. One agent looked like Lee Harvey Oswald and the other looked like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton wouldn't say anything. He just looked at my pettibone patents on the bulkhead, you know.
Oh,
and the Lee Harvey guy was giving me the third degree, and I had a fever. I was kind of sick, and finally, you know, what's this about, officer? And I got to make up my mind, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. You know, there was something funny. He says, "What's that?" Well, I was robbed when I was away on tour this last couple months. He said, why is that weird? And I said, well, not a lot of stuff was stolen, just ransacked. And yeah, so why is that weird? And I said, well, I don't know, but could have been right-wing militia. He got pissed off. And he goes, look, I want to take a picture of you. Now, I could come down to the DMV and get it there, but what about here? And then that's when the Bill Clinton guy said, when he finally said something, he said, did you paint these paintings? And I said, no, my buddy Raymond did. And in fact, you know what? For your fellow Oscar here, I will take a picture for him right in front of one of these paintings. They took their picture, and I never heard from them again. So I guess
really?
I got off the hook.
Raymond Pattenbone saved your ass.
Maybe, already made up in his mind, I wasn't the right guy. It was just a coincidence I was in that town. You know, I wasn't in the same hotel. In fact, a couple years ago, I seen that hotel being torn down. It was called the Dreamland or something. I was just in some Super 8. I usually don't use tails. I was by myself, so I just conked in this thing called Super 8. But anyway, I'm getting on a tangent. Brother Matt, how close are you with your...
I'm ready.
John, we got here... The spin cycle, brother man, together some beats.
They could have disappeared you, man.
Yeah. Has been listening to the tales.
Yeah, and so you can take a piss, but make sure you can hear what he's doing because he's going to slam some beats.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Wherever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating. facts of history repeating.
and Willie Newmar. Busy putting a CV in her new car. Didn't have to stick his head out for her. Or I came down upon it with a crowbar. Whoops, whoops, whoops. Sing me that country western song. Make it the one.
What was driving you? What was motivating? What was inspiring you for this week's spin cycle?
I had a medley of inspirations, starting with your guys' little conversation of Shirley Bassey.
Oh, yeah.
So we started there. Frank Zappa, 20 years this week he died, so we had some Zappa. And I was mentioning, I saw that over Fingerprints the other day at the record store, that they got the big Captain Beefheart thing,
right,
so
right.
Slipped some of him in there, too.
Did you ever get to see Captain Beefheart, John?
I did, actually, in 1980 when he played Manchester Apollo.
Wow, cool.
You know what?
The Mekons were in one row and the Fall were in the next row. And we were all like sat there.
There's a CD here, Brother Matt's got, that's got Manchester from that gig, 1980.
Yeah, that's when we went there.
It says Manchester 1918, My Human Gatsby Blues, Ha Hit. Oh, so it's Doc at the Radar Station. I saw that tour too. I had knee surgery. Yeah. I was in a cast.
It was a fantastic gig. We got in because we had a Balinese tour manager, and she went up to the front door of the Manchester Apollo and said, "We are good friends of Don Van Vliet."
Whoa.
And they were completely confused. And then somebody went away and came back and said, "Don Van Vliet, that's Captain Beefheart. Let them in."
Congratulations.
But it was a great, and it was really weird. We got in there, and Mark E. Smith and Mark Riley and all the guys from The Fall were in the next row to us. So it was like, you know.
You know what? Tony Mamone from Pere Ubu told me the same thing happened like in 75, 74 in Kent, Ohio. That the Devo guys, the Pere Ubus, the Pretender Lady, they were all at this one Beefheart gig.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, and you were saying before something about people coming playing your school with the Sex Pistols and stuff. So there were these kind of gigs that brought people together.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like when the Sex Pistols played in Manchester in 1976 or something.
It's the basement of that room where Bobby Dylan played his electric thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's like frigging everyone in that room formed a band or did something interesting, you know.
Right.
It was a weird time, you know. It was a kind of fracture in normality, you know. Suddenly there's lots of people understood simultaneously that something different was going on, and you know.
Yeah.
But I was always really like Beefheart. Beefheart's just fantastic. When we signed to Virgin Records,
yeah,
I'd go in the publicity office and they had Beefheart records in the cupboard, you know.
I think Doc at the Radar Station was on Virgin.
Yeah, when we were signed, same time we were like label mates with Captain Beefheart for about 3 minutes.
And Ice Cream for Crow, right.
Yeah.
Ice Cream for Crow. You know what? When punk came, we thought, and we heard it, we thought Stooges and Beefheart were already doing this kind of mindset thing and they just didn't have a name for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was. I don't know. I always kind of like more towards the American stuff. The stuff like Pere Ubu and, you know, Television and bands like that really were really interesting to me. Because I wasn't that interested in the sort of, you know, like we talked about before, the sort of speeded up heavy metal kind of like smash the system stuff.
But what about stuff like Fall or Alternative Television or...
Lemon Kittens. Yeah, there was a lot of, you know.
You know, what about Lemon Kittens?
I mean, a lot of the stuff in the north of England was built on that premise that it was a state of mind, not a fashion.
Yeah.
I felt like a lot of stuff in London was like, it was a fashion and it kind of, you know, played games with the media and there was a lot of kind of like, all right, we're real rebels, so we'll sign to a major label immediately. And, you know.
That's what was funny. Those are the only bands we saw was Jam and Stranglers and Clash. And maybe for the first record it was okay. But it was just all regular rock and roll after that.
The Stranglers were, you know, they were all in their 50s in 1977. It was kind of strange, you know.
Hey, tell me about this Waco Brothers with Paul Birch.
Oh, that's a nice little album. He just had this. He's a songwriter in Nashville, Tennessee, and he really liked. We did a lot of gigs with him. He was signed to Bloodshot, and he just had this idea. He wanted to make a record with the Waco Brothers because he said it was like being on stage with a rocket going off. So,
Okay, let's listen to some of that right now. This tune's right. Called "The Great Chicago Fire." I guess it's the name of the album too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never gonna find your heart. plus man. Getting used to you plus man. Never knew the tenderness. Lost his only friend. Never had much sympathy or kindness in the end. Rocks and riches move on up. Hunger into fights. Drank a cup of bitterness. Where's the sin in that? Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Youth is squandered, tossed away before it has begun. And heavy traffic claims a soul, a new day on the run. Hey, hey, fantastico, hit the top and then you'll know. Create, destroy, confess, getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Of our power, always conscious of our chains. Power slips away, but yes, something else remains. After all our time and the killing that was made, the living that you bought a mirror, happy to play the victim again. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness. Getting used to uselessness.
For Pedro Show, last music for the second hour, great Chicago Fire, Waco Brothers and Paul Birch. After that was Orange Disaster with Won't You Please, John Langford and Skull Orchard. I got to ask you about that next hour. Getting Used to Uselessness, and then Rooster Head, brand new, In Buddha's Palm, and finally Pigsville by Waco Brothers, which is kind of appropriate. And the middle hour with Pigsville.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, December 7th, 2014. Second hour, walk from Peter Shore, our guest, Brother Matt, John Langford. Hold tight for hour three. December 7th, 2014, it's third hour, walk from Pedro Show.
The warm summer sun at the end of the day, before an evening that lasts forever. Gently sleeping on the soft green grass, or riding out on a frosty morning, happiness in the freezing breeze, and later your pale hand in mine. Fire, light, and toast. Fire, light, and toast after I come home from playing cricket. Night and day there was trouble that the eye could almost see. In the valleys that lay open, in the papers now recovered, reading the bright mid-morning among the flowers.
to hold her in your arms. There's nothing like a song to make you forget. But it's what keeps you hanging on. Now I owe $100 for cocaine that I already did. And the bills in the mail say final notice in red. So I thank you, boys, for the whiskey that you bring. Though without you, I might be
for the day. Everything makes sense. Feel you like a climbing on the floor. And every tune seems so familiar. We must have heard them all before. Looks like that big clown's got a gun. He walked right back into the room. Master
come on down to the drugstore. Well, come on down, meet Geraldine. Come on down to the drugstore.
Walk for Pedro show started third hour off with some more contemporary Mekons. Warm Summer Rain and Space in Your Face. Then 1, 2, 3, Forever by John Langford and Skull Orchard. We played some last hour. I'm going to ask him about that. Miss Lana Rebel and the Broken Promises with Whiskey You Bring. Paranoid Fuck by Teen Lust. these teenagers, they sent me their music. It's called Paranoid Fuck. And they call their band Teen Lust. Three teenage boys. Flint. You know what band was from Flint, right? Grand Funk Railroad.
Flint, Michigan.
Yeah. Who's that documentary guy?
Michael Moore.
Yeah, that's him.
He's and from then that Roger and Me.
Oh, really? Drugstore by John Langford and his Sadies. Now, please tell me about this Skull Orchard.
Well, you know what it's like when you're in bands and you write songs that don't really fit with any of the bands, and you don't think any of the bands would really like them. So by about 1997, you know, after having been doing this for 20 years, I ended up with a big pile of songs that I thought I'd better make a solo album and put them on it. And I worked out the sort of theme for the album. All the songs, you know, were based about my, you know, real personal experiences and about sort of South Wales and where I grew up, which was, I didn't really know I was feeling nostalgic for it, but, you know, you grow up somewhere with a lot of character and, like, you know, it just became a thing for me to try and write about that part of my life, which was, you know, nobody else in any of the bands knew anything about, so. That's the Skull Orchard. Skull Orchard's a bar where no one comes.
Oh, okay. But are they Chicago cats?
Well, a bass player in the Skull Orchard is Alan Doughty, who was in Jesus Jones. So.
Oh, they're from England, right?
Yeah. So he's been, me and him have been playing for a while. He played in the Waco Brothers, but yeah, he's an English guy, so.
Okay. Okay, what, you know, you said 20 years you've been doing this, but how long has Chicago seen more than 20 years now?
Oh, well, I mean, you know.
If you were asked to describe Chicago scene.
I think when I moved to Chicago, it surprised me that it was a place where you could get things done.
Okay,
and
yeah.
It wasn't a place where people were asking you what your record label was or, you know. You had to kind of like impress people. It was a place where people asked you how they could help you. You know?
Wow. You know the nickname of that town, right?
The Windy City.
No, but there's another nickname, Big Shoulders.
Yeah, so you're Big Shoulders.
Yeah, I was conceived there. I was born in Virginia, but I was conceived there. My mom even gave me the address of the pad. I was recording in a borrowed Albini's bike and pedaled there, and I called my mom on the leash. Hey, Ma, here it is. Michael Watt, you were conceived there. I think you get to an age where your mom will talk about fucking anything.
yeah, but you know what? It's a tough town. It reminds me of the north of England. I lived in the north of England for a long time.
Yeah, right.
And I never wanted to move to London. So when I moved to a bigger city, moving to Chicago, Chicago was good for me, you know?
Yeah. What about touring? What were the differences between touring in the U.S. and England?
It's a lot more pleasant, I found, in the 80s in America.
Yeah.
Suddenly it became like, you go to towns and have a great time. And in England it was this drudge, I felt. It was really, there was a different atmosphere and more supportive, and people like seemed to appreciate you more. And also people had longer memories in America, I found, where in England you could be like flavor of the month one week, and the next week everyone hated you, and it would be you weren't really doing anything different. It was just like, you know, the, it was such a kind of hothouse. I mean, I quite liked that. It was quite healthy.
Yeah.
You know, build them up and knock them down. But, but you know, we, I don't know, we just found tremendous support in the States. And so I would never have done half the things I now do. I would never have done them.
If you would have stayed over. Okay. You just had a scissor tour. You know, they didn't send me any Three Johns stuff, but you were supposed to just go out now and do a Three Johns thing, right?
Yeah, that actually got cancelled because the singer got sick, so.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
He's all right.
Okay.
He's a superhuman being, and
great.
He's gonna come back next year even stronger, and we've got a box set of all the Three Johns stuff coming out next year.
So Three Johns have been around.
Yeah, I was from
Shit. Well, like, you know, somebody once told me, John, that the only thing new is you finding out about it. You know, I'm a slow learner. Shit, sorry.
That's all right. I tell you what, mate.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff I've forgotten, man. You know.
Here, I want to play. Take me to the fires, Waco Brothers, okay?
When my time expires, take me to the fires, and I will go. The only way we know, thanks to live my life now, not tomorrow. You won't see my face in a higher place. Oh, dear Father, please listen to me, and I'd long to live. Standing on this cliff, one side the land lays, buckles, jagged rocks, no way for a good man to go. Offer no redemption, there's no takers near. Just you mind your manners, we got company here. I've had a feeling about those crusty old men. I'm not sure if they're angels or ghosts. When the time expires, take me to the fires, and we'll go. The only way we know, thanks to live my life now, not tomorrow. You'll see my face in a higher place. You can't stake no claim on my last name. When it's time to go, just throw me in that hole, and there I'll gladly lay. Cause this world wears me out, with all these offerings of false gold. The dogs want my money, the vaults want my eyes. From where I'm standing, I realize, one side the land lay, but jagged old rocks are starting to look real good to me. When time expires, take me to the fire, and we all go. The only way we know, thanks to live my life now, not tomorrow. You won't see my face in a higher place. Boys. so well the first time that I saw your face. You walked in from the rain, you were right on the center stage. And we hit it right off with a bottle of scotch. The world was the better place. Thank you. sealed my fate tonight. Threw me in a room full of thirsty women till I came out with a wife. Will you dream of me in your slumber? In some hotel under your spell with a phone with too many numbers. Cop lights flash,
cop lights flash,
Van Gogh blue,
Van Gogh blue.
They promised me my life if I traded you.
Lady Godiva here, dressed so demurely, pats the head of another curly-haired boy. Just another toy. Sick in silence, she weeps and sings. Same words that have oh so clearly been said. So long ago. Craig is back gently around her shoulder. Life has made her that much older now. And she's found out how. Dressed in silk, light lace, and envy. I enjoy the lightest penny for her. Be passing care. Here today, now dipped in the water, making love to every poor daughter's son. Isn't it fun? Now today, propped in grace with envy, Lady Godiva appears to see if anyone's there. Hasn't care. Doctors come, but the nurse begs sweetly, turning on machines that leave you there. Body lies bare, shaved and hairless, bronze was screaming, now lies silent and almost sleeping. Brain must have gone away. Traps killed to the right pain. Who should cause the body to hither and lie? And the white light.
Got your eyes with an onion baggage. You're broke into so much habit.
That night was a good way.
Now come the moment of great, great decision.
One goes here.
One goes there. Either she's thinking, says someone is sloppy. The patient, it seems, is not so well sleeping.
The screams echo in the hall. Don't panic, someone didn't have a problem. This time, Dr. Rose is blamed. Patient is forced to complain. By my count of 10, to him.
the character took over. He had all the answers and all the good lines in the book of your life. Yeah, life can be so episodic, and there are episodes that you won't like. Or you can flick right through it, but there are dangers inherent. You might meet a nasty end in the book of your life. The final chapter's coming, gonna hit the last page running. Wish it was me, I wish it was me in the book of your life. Skip ahead to another time and execute the perfect crime. Always alone, never detected, never suspected at all. Lost between the lines in the book of your life. Weather being hot and dry, she started stand down by a riverbank, and a true love came riding by. Another soldier hoped for the wars in the book of your life. The final chapter's coming, I'm gonna hit the last page running. Wish it was me, wish it was me in the book of your life. The laws of physics are bending to produce a happy ending. Turning a new leaf in the book of your life. You said this is life, and this is what it's like. That sounds very wise, but if I had to stay in it, well, it wouldn't be like this. It wouldn't be like this at all in the book of your life.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for today's edition. Hey, we got the Xmas parade up.
It happened today at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They're going from 13th Street and then starboard on 6th.
It's something like that.
And then Motoko Honda's playing up in Pasadena.
Oh, cool, cool. I thought she was on her way down.
I want to get some pictures for Bob Lee and his LED. Last music for the edition, Waco Brothers, Take Me to Fire, then Mass with Astral Projection. Astral. There's no other way to pronounce that, is there? It's like, even if you have the strongest guy, biggest muscular dude, and his name is Thor. I mean, how manly can find Thor? I bet you're Thor. And then Come a Long Way, more Waco Brothers. Salad Days, Kill Switch Engage. That's a trippy name. Wrong Side of Love, Waco Brothers and Paul Birch. Now, Lady Godiva, Dan McGuire did something with my voice, and I just thought I'd throw it in.
Oh, cool.
What the fuck? So I could be part of the John Langford musical journey.
Sweet.
Book of Your Life, John Langford and Skull Orchard. So Skull Orchard, not a real band, just something you put together for this proj to talk about back home.
Well, yeah. No, but it turned into a real band after a while.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we did an album this year called Here Be Monsters, which very much was a band album, you know. But
they didn't send that to me. They sent
that's
me
not
called...
a Bloodshot. I'll have to send you one. It was on a label called Indigood,
okay.
In the Gutter Records in New York. Put that out.
Wow,
this one nice was called Bill McGathy, and he sort of came to know about me via my artwork because I paint as well. So he. Like found
that's right,
he never even knew about my music, so he got some of my paintings, and he paid me to do design tattoos to go on his body and stuff like that.
You
never really
heard
of him.
Design tattoos, John?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
I do some big ass skeletons right down your leg, mate.
Yeah. Well, I grew up baby housing, so I saw enough fucking tattoos. But I actually have a little tiny one on the back of my arm where I can't see. That's the number 47.
Oh, so what's that stand for?
If I don't get burned up in a fire, you know a way to ID me.
Yeah.
you know, what's it? It's called Old Bird or Old... This album?
Old Devils?
That's it. Old Devils. Let's name this album. Look... I found out about your painting just recently. I didn't know either. Fuck. No, I knew it the other way. He didn't know your music. He just knew you by paintings. Do you know about some guy from England? He's got a big mustache. He does paintings, and he's made about 500 albums.
What's his name? Yeah.
He calls the bands bunches of different things, but... It's
Billy
all,
Charlie.
That's it. That's it. I think he's a poet, too.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. I was having a total senior moment then.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the club. What's his story? I don't really know about him, but somebody gave me a buttload of his music, and dude.
Oh, no, check it out. It's really good. He's an interesting painter. He's just done...
Music is kind of garage.
He's one of those guys who's just been at it for a long time.
Okay, what part is he from?
I think he's from the south.
Okay.
Southern England, I would have thought.
I mean, his bands, his stuff. But he does these wild paintings. But his style is more like, not so tattoo. It's more like maybe William Blake or something. Great the
edge. Yeah.
Tattoo. Well, Newport, you know, the port thing, maybe. Where does this go back?
That?
Did you paint before you started doing drums and guitar?
Yes. Yeah, I just drew. When I was a kid, I just drew all the time. And I always thought I would go to art school because that would be like an easy option, you know?
Wow.
I thought I'd go to art school and sit around drawing for 3 or 4 years and then deal with like the realities of life after that. But as soon as I got to art school, the punk rock thing happened and we, you know, immediately formed the Mekons. So.
Yeah.
I never really had much chance to do it, and it wasn't.
No, but I know a lot of dudes in bands who paint. D. Boone was a painter, a drawer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a trip.
Yeah, it's amazing when you talk to people. It's like, and the number of bands that formed in art school is also weird. I mean, going back to, we worked with a guy called Dick Taylor.
Uh huh.
Three things. He played with the Mekons for quite a few years, and amazing guitar player. He had that band, the Pretty Things, and he was like, you know. He was in the Rolling Stones when they first started, you know.
Yeah, Ron Astor's favorite band was
with Keith Richards and Strange, you know.
And those guys were kind of art school too, right? Same with the Who guys, Townsend or something, Entwistle.
Yeah, John Lennon. I mean, you know. Well,
John Lennon was art school too, wow.
Yeah. The liberal education, mate, you put you in a room and then you do whatever you want. It's fantastic.
Yeah, look, if somebody was going to ask you about advice in this music racket thing, what would you give them?
Advice? Ooh.
When it comes to music.
I'd feel a bit leery about doing that because, you know, who am I to bloody advise anyone about anything?
You're not. But I asked you, so that's the only reason.
I don't know. I just think these days... Particularly, it's just like, don't worry about the career kind of thing. Just, you know, if you want to do it for a bit, don't worry about the logistics of it all.
Yeah.
Just make a bit of noise, you know, and see what happens. If you like it, then keep doing it. And if you don't like it, don't stop, you know.
Don't stop?
If you don't like it, stop.
Okay.
There's a bunch of kids right here in Chicago at the moment. There's literally a kind of garage rock high school thing going on. My son's 17, and he's got a great band called The Unknowns, and he's got mates. Have you heard of a band called Twin Peaks or The Orwells?
James Williamson told me about, maybe he had one of those kids sing.
Yeah, that's right. One of them sang, yeah.
On a side thing, yeah.
Mario from the Orwells. Well, he's a mate of my son.
So these are kids.
It's kind of really cool little, it's a really cool little scene of just kids just making a fucking load of noise, and it's brilliant. I love it.
John, that's great advice. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, me and Brother Matt.
Yeah, cool conversation.
Yeah. We just enjoyed the fuck out of you. And thank you for keep going and not stopping. What's that?
I can just Skype you both anytime I feel like it.
Yeah, yeah, you're in the love grotto.
I'm a pleasure point. Somewhere north of the equator, but west of the Rocky Mountains. Look, it's really our honor. Thank you so much. Keep on keeping on. That's what John Fogerty told me. I'll pass that on to you. You don't need to hear it from me, because you will. You got it in your blood.
No choice now, mate. No choice. Is
now, I want to check out your art. That's the Watt's got to learn up on this. But thanks so much. And please send me music from your son and from this new orchard, Skull Orchard, and Three Johns.
Yeah, I'll send you that album. Yeah. Give me Monsters.
Okay. Thank you much again, John.
I don't even know what it's called. See you later.
Okay. Brother Matt, thank you so much for your always evening.
Pleasure.
See you next week.
Definitely.
Okay. Everybody, keep your powder dry.
Yeah.